In just 4 days, the country moves to lockdown alert level 3, where most of the economy will be opened up. This comes amidst growing calls to have the economy opened up fully, with many questioning the logic behind various rules and restrictions. In the meantime, legal action looms against government as opposition parties and NGOs opt to battle it out in court. The Helen Suzman Foundation is just one of them.
The Helen Suzman Foundation's position is that the Disaster Management Act, in terms of which government is acting, is only meant to be used in an emergency and for a short period. After such a short period, Parliament must regain its constitutional role and it must pass legislation to deal with the state's response to COVID-19. Government must then implement this legislation. Parliament cannot abdicate its constitutional role on an indefinite basis. And we have therefore approached the Constitutional Court for an order directing Parliament and the Executive to act in this manner.
That was Anton van Dalsen, who's the legal counsellor at the Helen Suzman Foundation, on the legalities of the lockdown. In the meantime, it's all a bit of a catch-22. Open the economy and risk people getting infected and dying from the virus, or keep the economy closed at the risk of killing the economic engine. Amidst it all, President Ramaphosa is on the receiving end of mounting backlash. What does this mean for the economy and the ruling party moving forward? Martin Kingston from Business for SA and political analyst Richard Callan join me now to weigh in. Thank you both for joining me this evening. And Martin, let's perhaps start off with you, because legality aside, as a part of Before SA, you've been taking a very critical look at government's approach to lockdown and the kind of easing of restrictions that we've been seeing. And you're at a point where you're urging now government to fast track the economy's reopening, given the risk of a complete economic fallout and possibly the economy entering a depression. What's your assessment of the lockdown level 3 regulations that have been outlined today?
We think, Alicia, that the level 3 regulations are actually very much in line with the discussions that we've been having with government, more ambitious than we'd originally anticipated, much more like level 2. We'd said we wanted to transition out of level 4 through level 3 into level 2. We need to open up the economy as broadly and as quickly as is practically possible, recognizing at all times that we mustn't do anything that endangers life, that we need to preserve our health system, and indeed that we need to make sure that we can limit the transmission of the virus as much as possible. So the regulations that we've seen today, obviously they need to be amplified over the coming days. Broadly speaking, we think will satisfy most of the business constituency.
Richard, it is tricky because while you've got this economic fallout that is glaring, you've got the likes of the WHO advising that the infection rate needs to fall first before countries can begin to relax lockdown measures and restrictions in any significant way. Are you getting a sense of purpose given how things have been unfolding, or has it become incoherent for you?
Thank you. I think the government strategy, to my mind, the macro strategy, is still intact. It's still on course, and I think it still makes a good deal of sense. Some of the micro issues that have emerged in recent weeks, the disputes about when you can exercise the cigarette sales ban and so on, some of those micro issues have been the sort of proverbial pea in the princess's bed, unsettling, but not perhaps to the big picture. Now, on the big picture, South Africa finds itself in a very unusual position where it is opening up the economy, it's moving through these levels towards a normal kind of situation of trading and commercial activity, but it's doing so at exactly the moment where the transmission rate is beginning to spike. Now, other countries have done it differently. They've flattened the curve and waited until that curve was sufficiently flattened. In other words, that infection rates had stabilized before they opened up. We've done it differently, I think appropriately so, because in the initial stage, South Africa had to delay the transmission rate. It was never going to prevent it. President Ramaphosa was perfectly clear about that on Sunday night. It was a delay tactic. And in fact, although it caused a lot of hardship, it was successful because it did prevent the curve from rising exponentially in the early weeks. Now, the hinge question, the big question is, has government used the two-month period that it bought itself with the lockdown to put in place the necessary infrastructure and other public healthcare conditions and infrastructure and capability to absorb the inevitable public health crisis that will now gain momentum at the time when the economy is opening up? That is now the strategic hinge question. If it's done its job well, then the system will be able to absorb the illnesses and, I'm sad to say, the deaths that now will follow from an increased transmission rate.
Yeah. Martin, that is the key question. In your books, has it been successful in that regard? And if it has, have we gotten to a point, because you've been engaging with government in conversation, quite regularly, has it gotten to a point where the committee has become flexible to adjust regulations? You alluded to the fact that today's announcements show just how ambitious government has become, and one assumes that speaks to some flexibility starting to emerge from government's end.
Now, there's no doubt that government is demonstrating flexibility. Richard, of course, is right. We haven't actually started to climb the curve yet, in truth, although we've seen a very significant increase in the level of infection and indeed of, sadly, of deaths. We are some way away from the surge or the spike. We don't actually know whether or not it's going to be one or more. Many experts, to the extent there are experts, are saying that we're going to be with COVID-19 for the foreseeable future. And indeed, we're going to have to anticipate not only this year, but next year. The president has said as much, which means we have to learn to live with it. And so the question was whether or not we built our health defenses adequately in advance. We did, as Richard said, buy ourselves some 2 months. It's clear that there are now hotspots that have emerged, very specifically, obviously, in Cape Town, but not only in Cape Town, in many of the cities that are now being very much overwhelmed by it, and we need to ensure that our health system is in place. Now, we're confident that that's the case for now, but it clearly may not be the case going forwards if we look at the projections of the number of infections and indeed deaths that may ensue in the coming months. So now we've got to look at how we can practically, responsibly, and effectively open up the economy. And there are three aspects of that that we need to talk about. We need to ensure that the workplaces maintain and implement appropriate health and safety protocols. Many sectors of the economy have already put those in place. We're working with many others, as in fact Minister Patel said he is, to ensure that they can be implemented as quickly as possible. But the second, of course, is the public transportation system. It is a huge vector of transmission. We know that, and it needs to be contained and managed to the extent that it can. Again, we're working very closely, not only with government, but with our social partners in NEDLAC to try and ensure that we can actually spread out peak travel times, ensure that people are actually observing the requisite social distancing, wearing masks and hand sanitation, going onto and coming off public transport.
Yeah.
But the biggest concern, of course, are the home communities within which we live. That is where transmission is now taking place. It is community transmission, be it in the heartland of Johannesburg or Cape Town. And there we need to actually introduce fundamental behavioral change. Unless we do that, we're going to see not only hotspots emerge, but we're going to see a very significant ramping up in the level of transmission. We know that we're behind with the testing. We haven't been able to implement as a country the necessary tracking and tracing procedures. We as business have said that we're going to work very closely with government to try and implement those procedures on a national basis so that we can have testing, tracking and tracing, which will enable us to some degree to curb the velocity of the transmission. But the reality is that a large number of the population are going to get sick. And now what we have to try and do is ensure that we can bring the economy back to full productivity whilst managing the healthcare defenses.
Okay, so opening up this economy, Richard, in a responsible manner, but without going into micromanagement mode that you talked about right at the top. With that, South Africa's political system has been thrown into the spotlight because of its intricacies, because of its complexities, and it seems to be thrown specifically on who is actually calling the shots here. Is that warranted? Do you see the merit in going down this path of investigation, where, of course, we've had Minister Nkosasana Dlamini Zuma really at the heart of it all?
Well, there's a number of questions you put to me there. Let me unpack a couple of them. The first one, I think, relates to the constitutionality of some of the decision-making. I think what's important is that law-making is not done through the back door and that the Disaster Management Act is not used as a kind of Trojan horse for unlawful law-making. No one wants to see that. And indeed, I'm sure the court will strike down any policy-making or law-making that exceeds the boundaries that the Disaster Management Act sets, which says that only regulations should be put into effect that are directly attendant to the concerns of the disaster itself, which of course is the public health issue related to COVID. Where I agree with Martin, I think he's absolutely right. The regulations are broadly good, I think. A great deal, however, is going to depend upon the compliance and the good sense of companies in terms of their employment practices. Mm-hmm. And I think the best companies have already put in place very good measures to protect their employees, and that must be across the whole economy. Otherwise, the risk balance between opening up the economy in order to reduce the risk of further harm to livelihoods versus and striking the right balance with the other risk related to public health and illness and death will not be found. It's going to really be incumbent now on the private sector to do their bit. Government, in a way, has done its bit. The focus now, therefore, must be on government delivering a good public health defense system, as Martin put it, whilst the private sector puts in place the right conditions to protect people at work. The Achilles heel, unfortunately, is the one that Martin rightly identifies, which is getting to work. Working class people use public transport. My concern remains that public transport will be the weak link. It'll be where people get infected and pass on infections, however good the employment practices that are put in place by responsible employers are.
When it comes to the political landscape, though, I mean, are some of the criticisms that are out there in terms of how decision making has been, undergone warranted, Richard?
Well, clearly, as I said earlier, some of the micromanagement of some of the regulations in the past couple of weeks have been, I think, disappointing and have stretched credibility, I think, and that's been unfortunate. Some of the issues have been related to communications. Some of the communications by certain ministers and by the government in general has been lacking as well. And we haven't heard enough, I would say, from President Ramaphosa. He is the government's best communicator. And at a time of national crisis, people have a right to hear regularly from the head of the executive, because in the end, the buck stops with him. So I think those are some of the political considerations. I think for the opposition, it's going to be a very interesting period because one's noted how the EFF, for example, in the last few days have tilted their position from being broadly supportive of government to being much more aggressive in saying that the government is washing its hands of the working class and are clearly positioning themselves to blame the president and his government for deaths that will follow as a result of the inevitable, I'm afraid, spread of this pernicious pandemic.
Absolutely, because as much as we talk about this economic fallout, there's going to be some political fallout too, one will assume. Gentlemen, let's leave it there for now. Thank you so much for having joined me this evening. Of course, that Martin Kingston from Business for South Africa and political analyst Richard Calland as well.